Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the cultural and information beacon of the Four Corners in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking with Melody Groves about her new book, When Outlaws Wore Badges. Good morning, Melody.
Good morning.
When Outlaws Wore Badges, I just loved it. I was so amazed that you came up with this research and showed that not all Western lawmen wore white hats all the time.
Right. Actually, their hats were closer to gray.
Right. Right. Before we go further, why don't you tell the listeners what When Outlaws Wore Badges is about?
It's very interesting, I think, and thank you for your compliment. I'm glad you liked it. What I did was I looked at 14 different lawmen who walked the what I call the blue line. They had one foot on the law side and one foot on the outlaw side, and occasionally they were the same one at the same time. But they were sheriffs and deputy sheriffs, and then they were outlaws, they were cattle rustlers, they were train robbers, they were confidence men, they were all sorts of really interesting things. So that's, in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Right. Now, how many guys did you cover in here?
I think I covered, 14.
That sounds right. Right, 14, I just checked.
It is, 14.
Mm-hmm. So what made you pick these guys?
Good question. There were a few that just jumped right off the page.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you know, because I do a lot of Western research, because that's what I do. I write Westerns.
Right.
And I would come across a name or two, like Dave Rudabaugh, mm-hmm. and some of those. And I'm thinking, but they were also sheriffs. Why? How could that possibly be? And then as I really got into it, I discovered more and more men who were just like them. Even a couple I didn't mention, like Billy the Kid. He mm-hmm. was a regulator, which was part of the law, but he was, I didn't include him because I thought there was going to be too much controversy. As it turns out, I put in Wyatt Earp, and I had a friend of mine who's a historian said, whatever you do, do not include Wyatt Earp. He was a good guy. Well, he wasn't.
Not completely.
He
no.
had his, he did some things that he shouldn't have. And so, of course, I had to include him when I was told not to.
Of course.
But what happened then, as I talked to other historians and researchers, they'd say, oh, well, did you look at so-and-so? Did you think about so-and-so? Oh. So one thing led to another, and I narrowed it down to 14.
That must have been difficult. It seems like during that era, which is mid-1800s till the end yes. of the 1800s, there was a lot of stuff going on, and there wasn't a lot of regulation for hiring sheriffs or marshals or deputies. They kind of just could sign up, basically.
They sure could, and one of the things that a friend of mine was laughing about when she read the part with the Daltons, the only Dalton brother who was part of the gang and escaped relatively unscathed the Dalton raid on Coffeyville, Kansas, he ended up in prison for a number of years. And when he got out, the first thing he did was become deputy sheriff.
Right, right.
You know, and they were laughing at him. Look at his resume. He robbed a bank, and now I'm a deputy sheriff.
I know. I was amazed with that. I also noticed that there was a lot of action in Las Vegas, New Mexico.
It was a heck of a place, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
Mainly because again, there wasn't any law and order around or close by, so they became their own law. There was what they called the Dodge City Gang,
mm-hmm.
and they were a lot of people from Dodge City who had been thrown out of Dodge City and went west and created their own gang, and so they ran roughshod over Las Vegas completely. They mm-hmm. were a very interesting group of people, and ones that you would recognize. Doc Holliday was one.
Right.
Dirty Dave Rudabaugh was one.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his name, Hoodoo Brown.
Right.
Hoodoo Brown was the head of the thing. And he got the name Hoodoo because supposedly he dabbled in witchcraft. Yeah.
These guys, and I love the details here with, wasn't it Rudabaugh that didn't like to bathe?
Oh, yes. That's why they called him Dirty Dave.
And one gang of lawmakers played poker in the back room, snuck out the window, robbed a bank, and then came back.
Yep. Actually, they robbed a train.
A train, right.
And that was over in Wilcox, Arizona, and that's got to be my favorite story of all time.
That is so funny.
There's these guys sitting there in the back room, and they had planned to rob the train. So they're sitting back there, and they tell the bartender who knows about this, apparently he's in on it, they said, we're going to close the door and we're going to play poker, but you keep bringing us drinks, but don't let anybody in. So the bartender would come in, give them drinks and take out the empties and would tell people, oh, no, 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 the sheriff's busy. He cannot be disturbed. He's in the middle of this meeting. And so at one point they all sneak out the window, go rob this train that they know has a lot of payroll on it, and then come back in the window. And so they're sitting there playing poker when the engineer, who's discovered he's been robbed, backs the train up to the station, jumps off on his horse and rushes up and finds the sheriff. And he's trying to open the door, and the guys are like, no, 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 you can't open the door. He's playing poker. He's busy. So finally they relented and said, okay. So the engineer rushes in and says, oh, I've been robbed. And, of course, the sheriff and everybody there jumps up and goes, what? The train's been robbed? Oh, my. So the sheriff goes, I need a posse. You, and you, and all of his buddies there. You're all going to be deputies. Let's go. We're outraged. So they jump on their horses, and they're gone all night. And they come back the next day totally dejected because they could not find the robbers.
Aww.
Oh.
That is such a good story.
I think that is hilarious.
It is.
I love it.
It is so funny.
I wish I had thought of something like that.
No kidding. But and that they got away with it. That's just something.
They did. And what the end result was, however, the sheriff had buried the loot somewhere and was slow in getting it unburied so that the rest of the guys could divvy it up. And so somebody complained to somebody, and word got out, and they went, oh, our sheriff is not who we thought he was. But by then, he was gone.
Yep, moving on. That is great. There's great photos in here, too. And I noticed that a lot of them came from your own collection.
Yes.
So you must have
I've
huge files.
I do. I have a lot of photos and huge files and so much information that just is stored in my brain and stored on my laptop and my desktop computer. I hope it never dies because then I will be totally lost.
Right. Yeah, there's some great photos that captured these guys posing sometimes and
mm-hmm.
telling their tale. That's great. Mm-hmm. So are you still gunfighting yourself?
I am not. I took a break a while back and realized that I really needed to just call it a day, so to speak. So I rode into the sunset.
Ah.
I was a gunfighter for 10 years, and it was an amazing 10 years. I would like to go back and perform. I really would,
mm-hmm.
because it was fun. We did the fun stuff. We did dumb deputy and the bad guys who were too stupid to figure out things. And we just, and I got to play a snarky wife a couple of times that would just give her husband grief. And it was wonderful because I could take out all my frustrations on this poor guy, whoever was playing my husband. You know, he would get smacked around. He's going, hey. But what happened was, as I got older, I discovered that I had no problem when I would get shot. I would hit the pavement. Well, the problem was getting back up. And that became kind of embarrassing. It was like, I'm a big, bad gunfighter. Could you help me up?
Yeah, please.
So,
right.
Yeah, so that got a little embarrassing. But it was a wonderful run. It was 10 years, and we got to go lots of different places, or at least I did. They're still going to town there. They're still shooting up Old Town.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's been going like 35 years, something like that.
Amazing.
When I first started, we did 4 shows every Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Every Sunday, and they're like 30-minute shows. And then we got lazy. We all got older and went and said, hey, we should do 3 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we should do it like every other Sunday.
Right.
It became a job is what it did. And, of course, we didn't get paid. It's all volunteers.
Yeah.
And we are grandfathered in by the city of Albuquerque.
Oh,
but
wow.
That allows us to block up some streets. Pretty much is what that does.
Cool. And,
but the fun thing is, I mean, this is kind of perverse, but the fun thing was we always knew when there was a new police officer on patrol, whenever we would start, we start our show with a fire in the hole, so we would shoot, and invariably one of them would come running, a cop with his hand on his gun, and then he'd go, oh, it's you. Sorry.
Never mind.
So we had, you know, a good rapport with the cops that were down there. We still do, but sometimes they didn't get the memo. Poor guys.
It's you.
Now I feel sorry for them. At that time, I thought it was hilarious.
Right. Well, being the gunfighter you were, you really got a feel for what that era and what your characters feel and how they act.
I did. I really did. And I've used that a lot, actually. One of the things is, and I've told people this before, that the bullets are not real, but the adrenaline is.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
You're in the middle of these people pointing a gun at you. And the guys that I worked with like to use 44s and 45s because they made a lot of noise and a lot of smoke.
Uh-huh.
I have a 22 single action 6, and they called it my girl gun. Said, well, but the Cowboys like the 22s because they are good for up close. But
mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was just an inside kind of reenactor thing. But I know what it's like to stand on the street and face down somebody with a gun. Now, I do know that they're blanks, and I know that I'm not going to get killed. But I've been hurt a couple times.
Wow.
We all have. The wadding that comes out is darn impressive, and especially if you shoot at night.
Oh.
It's really impressive because it's got a heck of a wide range. I can't think of what it was, like 6 feet across, and it can go, the wadding, and there's what I'm talking about, and the wadding can go several yards, and it's hot.
Oh,
and you can see it at night because it's like kind of like fireworks. These red or orange sparks come out of the end of your gun, and when there's 6 or 7 going on, it's
wow.
So cool.
Yeah.
But the wadding, if it hits you in the face like it's hit me a few times,
ooh,
it burns and it hurts.
Oh, dear.
It hurts. One of our guys, we did a thing, Ghost Hunters of Albuquerque, did a big thing around Halloween there in Old Town, and they asked us to be one of the stops in their tour. We were the last stop.
Mm.
And so we had one of our guys would basically lie in this coffin with the thing open, the lid open, and we would shoot over him. And it was amazing. By the end of, like, day 3, his vest had these little holes all through the vest where he had been burned.
Wow.
It was really, and the scary, the other part of that, too, was it was late at night. And our last show would go on, like, at 11. And so we were usually done by 11:45, by midnight. And at midnight, there's nobody out there. Everybody else had gone. And so we had to park clear on the other side of the plaza. So like little kids, we would all huddle together and walk over to our cars, you know, just afraid that the goblins are going to get us or something. But you can feel, when, you know, nights like that, you can feel the history of that place.
Right.
You can just feel it.
That's fascinating.
So, yeah, it's just been wonderful. And the whole idea that you're shooting and there's people on your side, you know, your gang and whatever, it's really nice.
That's great.
It definitely, and I include that in my writing.
Mm-hmm. I think that you're really saturated in Western history. How did you come to love Western history so much?
Well, I've always liked Western, and I don't know where exactly that comes from. It might have come from television when I was a kid, because Bonanza and Rawhide were very popular. But I lived in Las Cruces, of course, in the southern part of the state, and I rode horses. My dad had a friend, and here I'm fairly little, and my dad had a friend that had a 17-hand horse, 17-hand high horse, and that horse was huge, and he would come visit. I lived in a pecan orchard, so it was kind of a rural area. My very first boyfriend came to visit on his horse. He brought his horse, and he tied it up out front, and I remember my mom saying, that horse better not eat my flowers. But I've always liked it, and I guess it's just because of where I grew up. And I grew up very, very close to Mesilla. I used to walk over there when I was a kid. Some of the neighborhood kids and I would go over there. We'd wander through these cotton fields and end up in Mesilla down at the plaza. And, of course, I knew Billy the Kid had been down there, and they had a stagecoach, and there was all sorts of wonderful stuff. So when you're a kid, it's just, you know, a toy land.
Oh,
and then I just got really interested in the West for some reason. I frankly, I don't know.
That's okay.
But it's something that I feel very strongly about. And I think if there's such a thing as a past life, I was a cowboy in a past life, because sometimes when I'm writing, especially when it's set down there around Mesilla, between Mesilla and Tucson, I know things that I really shouldn't, that I find out much later on. I'll come across a story or a book and it says something and I go, oh, I knew this.
I knew that.
I've already written about it. I know this.
Interesting.
So,
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's weird.
And you write a lot
it's
about
crazy.
It. You have both fiction and nonfiction.
I do.
Colton Brothers and...
And magazines.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Maud Overstreet are your fiction articles. Plus do you write fiction for magazines?
I don't write fiction for magazines. Find a good place to sell it.
Yeah.
But I would if I could.
Right. But you write plenty of nonfiction. It looks like you've got something coming up before Billy the Kid, the boy behind the legendary outlaw.
I do. I have Lady of the Law, which is a sequel to She Was Sheriff, and that's coming out the middle of March. It's coming out the 1st of March.
Okay.
I have three books coming out next year, and I'm not saying that to be cool. I'm saying it because, oh, no, I don't know, because I like to promote my work.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, I have three books coming out from March to June.
Wow.
It's like, oh, boy. I'm going to get busy.
Yeah. Well, you have been busy.
Yeah. But, Lady of the Law is coming out. It's, like I said, the sequel to She Was Sheriff. And it's not part of the Colton series. It's set in California in 1872.
Mm-hmm.
And it's female protagonist who, she's a mid-30 spinster who got elected to be... sheriff, and at first they just, in the first book, the town counselors decided that they needed some more money, people to come into the town, and the sheriff, the old sheriff, had gone fishing and hadn't bothered to come back, and nothing was going on anyway, and they really didn't miss him, but they thought, well, you know, we really need to make some money here. So they talked Maude into becoming sheriff just until election time. And turns out that she liked it, and she was good at it. And then she got, I don't want to give away the ending,
right.
But she had never ridden a horse. She hadn't, she ended up leading a posse. She had never drunk anything. She had never gone into a saloon because, after all, she is the bank president's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain things that she just can't do, but she did because she was sheriff. So there was some of that conflict there. You know, do I do this? Do I not do this? Well, I'm sheriff. I have to go in mm-hmm. and discover that she really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I read that one, and so I look forward to the other one, because that was great. Maude's a great character. She really changed in
thank
the,
you.
She was sheriff one. So
yeah, and Lady of the Law, she gets into trouble because the women of the town, some of the women, look at her and say, well, if you can be sheriff, I can open a business, or I can do this, I can do that. And the men are like, what?
Wait a
minute. You can't do this.
Look what she started.
That's right.
Wow.
So I may write a third one. I haven't decided yet. I'm still working on this Billy the Kid book, which is coming out June. It's one of my June books. It's actually, it's due tomorrow, so I'm about done with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing like deadlines.
Yeah, that's why we have them.
That's right.
Otherwise, we'd never get anything done.
It's true. Well, do you want to read a little bit from When Outlaws Wore Badges?
I like the Dalton brothers. They are really interesting guys.
They are.
I talked to the curator of the Dalton Museum
mm-hmm.
in Kansas, and because I was trying to figure out which brother, how it's a huge family.
Yeah.
And who exactly was involved, because, as you know, the research, they change names. As a matter of fact, the Daltons, there's two of them with the same name. There's two Bills.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, which, huh, which one?
Right.
So, the mother, their mother is related to the Youngers. So the Daltons and the Youngers are related. Oh, here we go. I will read to you about the robbery.
Okay.
And it's just like a page and a half. Okay.
Perfect.
And this is the Daltons.
Okay.
It says, one final robbery. The Dalton gang raids Coffeeville, Kansas. On October 5th, 1892, the sun radiated warmth and good cheer over Coffeeville, Kansas. Timing their arrival for the moment the banks opened, the Dalton gang rode into town, focused on robbing two banks. Concurrently. Figuring they were known around Coffeeville since the family lived near there, they thought they should disguise themselves. The gang of five donned false beards, then entered from the west at 8 a.m., hoping no one would recognize them. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
But the townspeople did. In his mind and out loud on occasion, Bob had boasted he could beat best Jesse James. Heck, he'd said he could rob two banks at once. This play was most appealing since it would be their last robbery, their swan song, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
The plan? Rob the Condon Bank and First National. Take the money, gallop down to Mexico, and enjoy life. By now, nearly every lawman and railroad detective was hunting the Daltons, so getting out of the country would be a good idea. Approaching the downtown area, they turned west into an alley, known today as Death Alley, and tied their horses at the end. With rifles and guns in hand, the three Daltons, Emmett, Gratt, and Bob, stepped into the plaza. Gratt, along with Dick Broadwell and Bill Power, entered the Condon Bank and demanded money. The bank manager calmly told them that the lock was on a timer and wouldn't open for several more minutes. Bamboozled, Gratt and his men stood waiting instead of trying the door. In reality, the safe had no timer, but it did contain $40,000. A passenger glanced in the bank's window, recognized Emmett Dalton, realized a robbery was in progress, and quietly ran across the street to a hardware store. Townspeople were not armed, not even a sheriff, so they grabbed rifles and pistols from Isham's Hardware, which still stands at its original location. With loaded weapons, they took positions behind wagons, barrels, and hay bales. While the citizens were positioning themselves Emmett and Bob successfully managed to hold up the First National Bank located across the street from the Condon Bank. When they stepped outside, the shooting started. Darting back inside, they rushed out through the back door. As they came around from the building's corner, Bob shot a man in the heart. Still on their feet, the two ran north from the bank and west down the street toward their horses, nearly two blocks away. During that run, Bob shot two more citizens. Hearing the commotion outside, Grant and his two partners decided to make a run for their horses without the money. As they exited the Condon Bank, the marshal stepped into the alley, looked back over his shoulder, and was shot by Grant. Men fired on the gang from all directions. Grant lay bleeding in the alley. Dick Broadwell had been shot several times before dying. Bill Power, wounded, made it to his horse and headed west. He fell dead on the edge of town. Bob continued to fire even though he'd been shot several times. Emmett received 23 gunshot wounds through his right arm, below his shoulder, through his hip and groin, and between 18 and 30 buckshots in his back, and survived. He made it to his horse and started for freedom, but he noticed Bob was still alive. He circled back, offering his hand to his brother. At that point, he was hit with a double-barrel blast and fell to the ground. The gunfight lasted less than 10 minutes, but eight men died, four from the gang and four defending the town. Bob and Grant were buried in the back portion of the Elmwood Cemetery in Coffeyville.
That was a whole comedy of errors, really. I mean, the banker said, it's on a timer, when it wasn't. And then the townspeople just took the guns off the shelf and said, you know, we'll take care of it. They tried to wear costumes. I mean, it was the whole thing was a crazy mess.
It was a lot of bravado on the Daltons' part.
It really
was. Going, oh, yeah, we're going to be better than Jesse James.
Right.
We're going to rob two banks.
Leave the horses two blocks away. That was so, I mean, it was tragic, but it was also very funny. Wow.
Yeah, I've been down Death Alley, and uh-huh. It hasn't changed, and nothing there has changed. Oh, they fixed the bullet holes in the windows in the bank, and that's really about it.
So would you rather write fiction, or would you rather write history?
You know, right now, since I've been doing this Billy the Kid book, been doing a lot of nonfiction now for the past few months, I'm really ready to do fiction.
Mm-hmm.
However, with fiction, you do a lot of research anyway, and you have mm-hmm. to make sure you're right.
Right.
So, but it's not as, I mean, yes, it's important to be accurate, but you can make up what your guys look like and your mm-hmm. women, and you can make them do what you want them to do, not what they actually did in history. So I do enjoy fiction like that because my mind can just go where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Will there be more Colton brothers?
There will be one more, and it will be my last of the books, coming out the middle of June. It's called Trail to Ten Town, and I think it's going to be the end of the Colton series.
Oh.
That'll be six books, and I think it works out really well because all four of the brothers are together,
mm-hmm.
and they're herding cattle from Mesilla up to the middle of California, and they have all these misadventures and things like that.
Oh.
And each brother has his moment in the sun, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the book, the four brothers are together. So I think it works well. I have another series that I'm going to start writing. It's set in Texas, and it's got three brothers. So I like doing things with brothers and family.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say in Outlaws More Badges, there was a lot of family stuff going on, brothers and cousins and interrelated activities. So when
right.
you write the fiction about it, that just makes sense. Tell people also that you have a website, melodygroves.net,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
all the information is on it, and you're a great award winner. You are raking in the awards. So that's great.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you.
I really appreciate anybody who reads Westerns, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, And that's the only way we're going to be able to keep the West alive, the Old West alive, is by people reading and appreciating what's out there. And I just say support your local independent bookstores and your local authors.
Well, I've enjoyed reading your work. I look forward to the next ones, and I hope we can talk about those.
Absolutely. As soon as it comes out, I'll expect 3 books next year.
Great. You're busy. And that was Melody Groves talking about her latest Western history book, When Outlaws Wore Badges. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.